Bless it.
Who makes it possible for us to come and speak here, even though the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation doesn't even know we're here. She said, oh, no, they have no room. They're not here. So there's a lot of people who don't actually care to hear what she wants you to hear. And so I'm very, very pleased to be in the same room with my brother Ward, American Indian Movement, Sister Rosa. We've been on panels before, and to meet Davey D, who I only knew about from email. So my topic was the legacy continues. Now, which legacy we're talking about? Well, we have these conflicting legacies. The COINTELPRO that Ward spoke about from this origins, pre-Civil War origins. We use COINTELPRO kind of as a code word, counterintelligence program, for those uses of state power to destroy, disrupt, discredit our resistance. Now, one of the, I'm going to try and be very condensed here, but they told me I had 15 minutes, so I'm prepared for 15 minutes. Okay. Some of you think back to when the Oklahoma City bombing, federal building was bombed in Oklahoma City. The very first stories came out and said, this is the work of black Muslims. Immediately. They immediately said black Muslims. And I was kind of, really? You know, anyway, they retracted that. Then they said it was just Muslims. And eventually they located a white, blonde, former Special Forces agent. Guess what? I didn't notice, maybe you did, I didn't notice any vendetta going on against white, blonde, Special Forces agents as potential terrorists. No. There was something very, very odd about that whole prosecution. So Timothy McVeigh didn't talk. We don't know what the story was.
That's right.
Shortly afterwards, around the same time, among the police in Atlanta, there was the Joint Terrorist Task Force, including also the sheriffs and also the FBI and also Atlanta police, moved against someone that we knew in the movement as Rap Brown. He's now known as Jamil Alamin. And I'm pointing this out because he was on his way to take his son to school. And they swooped down on him, grabbed him, took his son, held them. The police held his son for 2 or 3 hours interrogating him. His son was maybe 9 years old at that time. They took him and charged him with attempted murder of a drug dealer in a park in front of his mosque in Atlanta, in the West End. Now, what the Muslims had been doing in that community was cleaning it up and getting rid of drug dealers. The drug dealer in question said the man who shot him had dreadlocks. Jamil Alamin has, you know, kind of like a skull cap and hardly any hair. The charges were never dropped. He was not prosecuted. There was no evidence. The charges were not dropped until a few years later. I think it was 1999, is that the correct date? When he was arrested and charged in March with attempted murder and murder of deputy sheriffs in Atlanta. And that's when we found out in the papers that those charges weren't dropped. Now I'm going to tell you something very odd. I was in New York, and I pick up the New York Times, and it says, ex-Black Panther charged in killing of deputy. I said, ex-Black Panther, who's that? Then I read it's Jamil Alamin, and I said, oh my God, here it is. It's COINTELPRO. They've already got you in the press believing Black Panthers kill cops. So here's a uniformed sheriff who's dead. So then they're going to call the person they want to frame with the shooting ex-Black Panther. Now let me tell you about Jamil Alamin. He was the chairman of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee in 1967. He was a member of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee for many years before. He was a imam in Atlanta for some 26 years. Now, of his career, about 4 months, he was an honorary minister of justice of the Black Panther Party. But when they arrest him, he's called ex-Black Panther. So the news coverage of that incident was like a lynch mob. He was ultimately arrested in Whitehall, Alabama, escaping from the people who are trying to kill him. And it was a black elected sheriff sheriff who prevented an FBI sharpshooter who was down there specifically to kill him from doing it. They brought in this FBI sharpshooter. So the Joint Terrorist Task Force has been pretty active recently. I'm going to talk about some things that have been happening under the radar here. They've been reinvestigating 1970s-era police killings. Particular one in New York, there were two of one black and one white policeman, Foster and Laurie, who were murdered. The person who was arrested and charged, his name was Henry Brown, was acquitted. That was way back in the 70s. So here they come again, questioning people about this killing. Oh, you know, father is Waverly Jones's father is ill. We want to bring closure. Can you help? Da, da, da. So they go and question the man who was acquitted, go to his home after he's just returned from a funeral to question him about this. They go to the home of a former Black Panther named Janet Cyril, who they knew had recently suffered a very severe sickle cell attack, kidney failure, was almost dead, came home on oxygen. FBI Joint Terrorist Task Force comes, we want to talk to you. We want to talk to you about Foster and Laurie. Joanne Chismar, this is what they said. Joanne Chismar told us that you have some information about who did it, but we think they're dead. Now, how the Joint Terrorist Task Force gets to talk to Joanne Chismar and why she said, you know, these are the kind of lies they tell. I'm just giving you this background. More recently, let's bring it up to date. This is very, very public information. May 2nd, 34th anniversary of an incident that happened on the New Jersey Turnpike in which Warner Foster, who's a New Jersey State Trooper, was killed. Zaid Shakur, who was a member of the Black Panther Party, former New York Deputy Minister of Information, was also killed in a shooting incident in which Joanne Chismar, also known as Asada Shakur, and Clark Squire, also known as Sundiata Akoli, were arrested and charged with murdering the state trooper and also murdering Zaid Shakur. Now, they were tried separately. Clark Squire, Sundiata Akoli, was convicted of both killings. A few years later, Asada went to trial. She was convicted of both killings. She was imprisoned in the Clinton Correctional Facility, and then 2 years later, she escaped. For the last 20-some years, she's had political asylum in Cuba. The Joint Terrorist Task Force, in collaboration with the New Jersey State Police, petitioned, with the help of the State Attorney General and the collaboration of Attorney General Gonzalez, petitioned to get extra money from the anti-terrorist funds, which are public monies, to raise the bounty to capture Asada Shakur to $1 million. So this is what this war on terror seems to be becoming a tool, increasing the toolbox of COINTELPRO, because these people I'm mentioning were targets of the COINTELPRO program when they were in the Black Panther Party. It's important to understand there is no legal way to bring Asada back into the United States from Cuba because there's no extradition treaty. So when they put a bounty of $1 million and circulate wanted posters in English and Spanish all over South America and America and Europe, they're circulating them everywhere except, I believe, Africa, with her pictures, and they say $1 million, what does that tell you? What does that tell you? And after they got this bounty, New Jersey State Troopers had a meeting in Miami with the Cuban American Foundation, who are known to have terrorists, about what they can do. So what is the message? This is what I want to talk about. What is the message that's being sent out to younger people, young black people, that this is what their government is doing in the fight against terrorism? And what is this message being sent out to the children of these people who are there re-portraying? We think of them as freedom fighters, and they're calling them terrorists. They're people who've already served their time in prisons in the United States, who now have their crimes reclassified as terrorism, because terrorism under the Homeland Security Act, an act of terrorism means an act that breaks the law. So I'll just tell you about one of the people who's getting these messages, and this is Maceo Cleaver, who's the son of me and Eldridge Cleaver, and he was born in 1969 when his father was a fugitive and also the Minister of Information of the Black Panther Party in Algeria. I was a communications secretary. After he was born, we moved to France. We received political asylum. I'm skipping over a lot, but in 1994, my son converted to Islam. He went to study the religion in Senegal. He began studying Arabic in Egypt, then Sudan, and finally in Kuwait. Since 1999, he and his family, and his family gets larger and larger every year, settled in, I have 9 grandchildren. And 8 of them are my son's children. he settled in the Persian Gulf country of Qatar, which is currently the central command for the war in Iraq. He works for the oil company, the state oil company. Now, the Joint Terrorist Task Force has taken an interest in my son very recently. There are other Americans who live there who converted to Islam. The mother of one of those, whose name was Rita Erickson, lives in a small town in Nebraska. And she told me most of the people who live there are Germans and Russians. So this FBI agent visited her to talk to her about her son, to help essentially intimidate her, to get her son to come and talk to the FBI. And in the process, her son lives in Qatar also. In the process, he mentioned to her about my son. He said, he's on our list. He's had contacts with Al-Qaeda. He's just like his father, but in another country.
Wow.
Okay, so everything there is not true. But this is in the FBI script. This is a Joint Terrorist Task Force. So I was outraged. What list? So my son says the FBI is going around trying to intimidate parents who have children who are converted to Islam and live in the Arab world, intimidate these children, or their sons and daughters, or adults, into working for the FBI, because they don't really have any inroads. They have no credibility. I sat here and listened to one of the panelists the other day saying John Walker Lynn was doing what the CIA should do. He should, you know, joining the, infiltrating. I said, but John Walker Lynn was a Muslim. You know, I mean, he did these things because of his faith. So what we have here is a convergence of Black Panthers being reclassified as terrorists. We already know that Muslims are being classified as terrorists. So I have a son who's 36 years old. His father and mother are Black Panthers. He's a Muslim. Last June, he tried to come to the United States to get a work visa. He wanted to go take a job he was offered in Saudi Arabia. He had to come to the Saudi embassy to get this visa. He went to take a flight, and he flew from Doha to Dubai, the next country. When he got there, they said, I'm sorry, you can't get on this flight. You have to have a clearance from the American Embassy. What? So he went back. So that was on a Friday. Now, the Thursday before he went to get on that flight, now I have to say, at that time I lived in a very small town in Connecticut on a street that's one block long. In the morning, I happened to go out that Thursday, came back, there was a BMW parked right by my house. Who's that? I said, go in. My daughter says, oh, yeah, it's been out there for a couple of hours. I said, BMW? I don't know anybody. You know, so I go out to see who this is. Looks like maybe it's a visit from the government. But the guy starts waving and backing up. And I said, you know, I would have believed that was the FBI, except they were in a BMW. That just didn't fit. Later on, I found out that Homeland Security troops are issued armor-plated BMWs. Okay. But then that later on in that afternoon, a little red Honda came on the parallel street and stood out there for a couple of hours. And then I went to see where it was. It was sitting in a place where it had direct sight onto my back porch. So I contacted lawyers. I contacted Cynthia McKinney's office. I was just writing an email and very, very outraged about this. This all happened in July. And just 2 months after that, my son's passport was confiscated. And they said, why? 13 holes on his passport. So what? This is the same generation. My son would be the same age as Tupac. My son was living in Atlanta, and there were other young men whose parents were in the Black Panther Party. They used to have meetings. Now I want to tell you something. These young men all seemed to have similar experiences when they were in public school. And those experiences involved being called out of their classroom, into a room, and given tests. Oh, and they were told that these tests were about high intelligence. But they all had the same experience. And I said, okay, when I heard that my son was on a list, it's not, we're not talking no-fly list. We're talking some other list. We're talking about the list that every child whose parent was a revolutionary in the Black Panther Party, in the Republic of New Africa, in any of these resistance movements, every child got on a list. They've been following and tracking these children. Now, what happens when these children become Muslims? What happens when these Black Panthers become Muslims? What happens is what happens to Jamil Alamin. What happens is that what they call racial profiling and targeting and COINTELPRO countering, and when these messages come out, my son is extraordinarily religious. He prays five times a day. I mean, he learned Arabic so he could read the Quran. So what kind of messages is he giving? And what kind of messages do they want you to have? I'll tell you, in the COINTELPRO, one of the documents, in March 3rd, 1968, the FBI wrote a document and they said, the black youth need something to be proud of. They need to understand if they become a revolutionary, they'll be a dead revolutionary. And in the COINTELPRO five-point program, one of their points was they want to make sure that these black, I think they called us, they didn't call us revolutionaries, I think they called us black hate groups, was
black
it?
Black nationalist hate groups.
Black nationalist hate groups, as opposed to white nationalist hate groups. That was the Klan, okay? These black nationalist hate groups have to be prevented from gaining respectability among regular, normal black people, white people, but particularly among the youth. And they wanted also, point four, I think, was to prevent the young people from joining these organizations. So when you have young people who are taking it upon themselves to express resistance, to become Muslims, to have faith, to insist that they have a claim and a right to an entirely different world, as we taught them, COINTELPRO is here to tell them, you cannot follow in those footsteps. There are no footsteps for you to follow because counterterrorism funds will be used to squash all of that out. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cleaver. Yes, now it is time for you all to have an opportunity to ask questions for the panelists. And